Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is poet and educator Catherine Howd Machen. Machen is a professor of writing at Ithaca College. She has published 30 collections of poetry, and her poems have appeared in dozens of literary journals, magazines, and anthologies. Her most recent book is one she co-edited with poet Andre Kuda. It's called One for the Road, Stories for Teenagers Whose Families Suffer from the Disease of Alcoholism. It was published by Split Oak Press. In 2002, Catherine Howd Machen was named the first poet laureate of Tompkins County. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tish. I'm so glad to be here today.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here, too. I want to delve into this subject right off the bat. Tell us why you wanted to do this collection. So tell us about your mother.
Well, I started to live with my mother after my dad died back when I was 13 in 1966, and I had not known how active an alcoholic she was. A very functional alcoholic, excellent at her job, but as soon as she would come home, she would, after dinner maybe, the cigarettes would go, but during dinner she might start to drink a little, and then she would go upstairs and become my other mother, drinking Canadian Club until she passed out.
Wow, wow. How did that affect you?
Shame.
Yeah.
I was sure, here I was in a new place, trying to get to know people, assuming that I was the only one this happened to. It didn't help that we lived on the quote-unquote other side of the tracks in Pleasantville, New York.
Yeah.
A place of great wealth. And, you know, I think it's kind of the epitome of the suburban lifestyle in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sure that I was the only one, and I had to hide it. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways I had to hide it was to empty out her ashtrays and throw away her liquor bottles. They became my tasks. And in some ways, it was like the opposite of a pirate hiding treasure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the whole definition of being a co. But a child wouldn't have known that, right?
Exactly. Exactly. No, there was no talk at all in school in the 60s.
Yeah, I
about
know.
Any issues that we could be surviving.
I know. No,
in
no
our
one
dark privacies.
In your introduction, you have a beautiful poem that is a good way to introduce this subject. It's called In 1969. Can you read it for us?
Oh, I'll be glad
to. Tell us about it, if you like.
Well, I can't even remember exactly when I wrote it. I've been writing about my experience as a survivor for many, many years. But it was looking back at that year of 1969, and I certainly was way past it in my life before I was able to write the poem. In 1969, what were the secrets that we didn't tell? Bold lyrics blared. Drums throbbed, a rhythm full of wanting. Cry of organ rose and fell. And always the guitars wailed out to pull us sweating through our adolescent fears. Inside, we kept to silences. You locked in anger at your father's fists. My tears saved tight for pillows when the whiskey knocked the laughter from my mother's voice. The sound of shame still louder for us all than rock and roll. We danced, we smoked, desire found the words to reach for sex. Yet we made mock of anyone who tried to make us say what hurt. We lied. There was no other way.
That sums it up so well. You know what I was thinking, too? We were brought up in what we now call the Mad Men era. Martini lunches were the norm. Cocktail hour was what our parents just did. And it was all kind of a big joke in some ways.
Yeah, I remember, and I've still held to it, back in my early teens, vowing I would never drink a martini. I saw it as the absolute horrible symbol of the kind of lifestyle I wanted to avoid.
The whole culture actually endorsed it, you know? They had fake drunks on TV, and then they were funny, and it was entertainment. Remember that?
And most houses had their cocktail bar.
Yeah.
You know, the black leather and the high stools down in the basement. It used to be very, very elegant.
I remember those days, too. Now, it says in your introduction that you tried to put a collection of writing about alcoholism together about 30 years ago, and it didn't work, and it didn't happen. How come?
Well, that was the time that my mom started to die, so I had the book, was trying to find a publisher for it, had almost found a publisher who then backed out because one of their readers was a recovering alcoholic who thought the collection was attacking alcoholics.
Oh.
Didn't understand the collection is for those who are surviving, not attacking those people. Sure, there can be pain. The poems are talking about pain. They're talking about truths that are not pleasant. Yeah. But the book is not to go out there and have us slam against the people who are doing the drinking and their illness, mm-hmm. but for those young people who, unless it's a very unusual teenager who can get away without running away or going to live with another family member, most people whose family members, one or more of them, are drinking or using other drugs heavily and usually hiding it, of course, are trapped in that situation economically, at least until they can graduate from high school.
Exactly. And of course, there is a lot of anger. And I see it in this collection, too. So that perhaps is why some people think you're attacking.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's part of the hurt syndrome.
Exactly. And it's so important to so many people. I've done work before in collecting other people's work. I've never had so many letters of gratitude from contributors saying, thank you to Andre and me, you know, giving them a venue for what they've written perhaps years ago and never dared to share.
Mm-hmm.
It had to have the right context where they felt safe.
Exactly, exactly. So 30 years, you know, wind to now, to last year when this was published.
Well, then it's a whole different book.
Yeah, it must be a whole different book.
Oh, yeah. Andre and I put out a national call and had so many people. I was amazed at how many manuscripts came in. And, of course, it was a long process to decide which ones. It's never just about the highest quality, but you don't want to have too many that sound too similar in the experience. So always creating a book that has many, many people in it is very important.
Yeah, exactly. All the different voices. And the way people dealt with it is so different person to person in
exactly.
many ways. Some people hid it. Some people talk to their friends about it at least. I know that. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, do you think we've opened up as a culture? I mean, we obviously have, but are there still people in the closet about alcoholism? Or is it an entirely different world now, do you think?
I think it depends where you live.
Mm.
I think it depends on what people's jobs are. I mean, there are folks who, if they're representing a business in a town, let's say, you can't be sure. You can't be sure if someone started going to meetings, they would be accepted.
Yeah.
And, I mean, certainly Ithaca has more 12-step programs than bookstores. I kind of wish it was the other way around, but the 12-step programs are very important. So here, obviously, we have much more of a way of being open. But I'm sure still, even in Ithaca, there must be people who, in order to protect their jobs, in order to protect their family members, mm-hmm. don't dare get the help they need.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. That's why I'm surprised in this collection that there aren't any people insisting on being anonymous. That's why I was thinking it is perhaps a more open era.
There were a couple of people who wanted to use pseudonyms, and we said, fine, it's perfectly you do that. But most people, no problem at all. They wanted to have their real names.
Yeah, yeah. Finally to heal.
Exactly. And what we did in sending our copies out to contributors, we sent two to each one, which is fairly standard. Of course, we had no funding to be able to pay people, but people didn't care. They wanted to get the work in. And it was thanks to Ithaca College that the book could be published in its first printing anyway. It's a wonderful offering that we took from the provost's office because there are 7 or 8 Ithaca College students and faculty who are part of the book in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful collection. It's really touching and so real. And it does help one heal, I'm sure.
That's what we said to contributors. Mm-hmm. Please, we're sending you 2 copies, one for you to keep. Please, if you will, give the second one out to someplace, to a center, to a high school. Get it into the hands of somebody who might not otherwise find it.
Now, when I was growing up, alcoholism was thought of as a character flaw. And we've come to find out that it really is, in fact, a disease. Do you think that's accepted across the board? Or are there still some people who think, oh, you're weak?
I'm sure it's a combination.
Mm.
I mean, there are still people who think it's bad for anyone to get therapy, for example. That, oh, no, you got to just, you know, pull up your socks right up to the knee and fix it for yourself somehow.
Yeah.
But it's so good. Here we are in 2011, and there's much more of an understanding of the intricacies and of the genetics of alcoholism as well.
When do you think that changed?
Oh, it's a very good question. What do you think? I mean, what's been your perception generally?
I think it's just sort of the era of openness and people trying to be more honest about their lives. And I remember when I was living in San Francisco, people would talk about addiction in the 70s, and that was
okay.
That
yeah.
was quite surprising.
I'm sure that would be more the cutting edge
yeah,
of it being
it's almost
very
like
open.
Coming out of the closet in many different ways, not just LGBT, but coming out of the closet as an alcoholic, as an addict. And, of course, the AIDS epidemic made people have to deal with the,
exactly.
the drug connections.
Exactly. So it became a matter of one's own survival, perhaps, to uh-huh. be able to talk about it and get help.
Do you think the fact that it has been tagged as a disease instead of a character flaw has helped alleviate some of the guilt and shame
that
survivors have had to deal with?
I'm certain of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Has that been the case for you, too? Did you go through that metamorphosis when it went from a character flaw into accepted as a disease?
I'm still working on it in my memories of my mother because I still have such pain of having that other mother upstairs. So I can step back and use the sane part of my mind and say, of course, I forgive her. And yeah. I do very, very deeply. But of course, I think if someone has one kind of addiction, it's usually not alone. There are other factors somehow contributing to it.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother had a lot of anger against her own mother.
Mm.
And
a lot of it is self-medication, too, from pain.
Exactly. That was it. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. The irony is that I actually found out more about my family than I ever would have because of the alcohol making my mother a little more loose-tongued. She'd tell me stories that she might not even remember telling me. But sure, they sure have fed my poetry and my sense of self and of my history.
So in some ways it was lucky, do you
yeah,
think?
Yeah, well, it's...
Because that was an era, too, when everybody was pretty secretive about, you know, realistic aspects of life.
Oh, yeah, the propriety. I mean, she was born in 1912.
Mm.
So can kind of put history on what the way she was raised to understand the way the world is. On the other hand, she also was in show business in New York in her teens into
wow.
the Depression. That's where she met my dad. She had kind of a mixed life, I think, of what you weren't supposed to do and what you were supposed to do. And I
yeah,
think.
And then the showbiz, you know, the showbiz era was also kind of a party era, too.
Oh,
and
yeah,
everybody
and the
was
whole
drinking and smoking.
Smoking, heavy emphasis on the smoking without any awareness for so many years of how bad it was.
Oh, yeah. There was a hep prop
yeah,
for,
absolutely.
For a long time. I know.
And so now, often they go together for people.
Yeah, and they still do, unfortunately, yeah. when kids see people in movies. Now, I want you to read another piece from One for the Road. This one's called Sentinel, and it's by Jeff Walt.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about it.
We've got several poems by Jeff in here. Again, I use this book in my personal essay classes because they are, although poems rather than essays, in the ones that are poems, they are autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
So again, he's putting onto the page with great artistry an experience of when he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
Sentinel. When my mother fell asleep with lit cigarettes, I was the watchman in a rocking chair at the end of her bed. Jumped awake at the slightest scratchy flick of her Zippo. Still drunk, half asleep, with Nembutals in her bloodstream, she managed to wake, fumble the pill bottles, and spill NyQuil on the nightstand until she found a pack of Winston's. After a few puffs, she'd pass out again, one arm flung off the bed, the cigarette suspended between two fingers, the ash lengthening, trembling, until it dropped to the carpet. I'd watch it fall, mesmerized by the power and beauty. In that second, the bright ash became a small, hypnotic flame, and I had to act quickly, had to stomp it out, or let it catch and carry us away.
That's really great. Now, that feeling of unsafeness is obviously a relic of having been brought up by an alcoholic, right? Can you talk to us about that? How
well,
unsafe
not,
one
not
feels?
Being, as I talked about that other mother, you know, which mother is she now? You know, which father is he now? How will he react to me in a way that is what I'm used to? What will it be different? How am I supposed to do? And of course, always, how can I fix it? Somehow exactly. It must be my fault because I'm not loving her or him enough the right way, what they need.
Yeah, and I assume you were an only child.
An older brother.
You have an older brother. How did he deal with this? Do you know?
My brother, 6 years older, had his own terrible darknesses. After our mother died, he never had a single ice cube in the house again. He lived with her after high school and stayed working in the same job that she got for him when he was 18.
Wow.
In some ways, they were almost like a married couple in the way that they were together in the house economically. But he hated the drinking so much. He turned inward. He committed suicide.
Really?
Years after she died. And, of course, there's never one reason for suicide. But his darknesses turned in upon him. Vividly, I remember him having no ice because he could not bear the sound of ice cubes tumbling into a glass.
Yeah, that
is splash of Canadian Club.
Yep, that is the sound of drinking, isn't it? The ice cubes clinking. Now, when you started planning for this collection, tell us about some of the material that came in. Were there any major surprises?
No, I would say there weren't any major surprises. I'd say, just one. I'm delighted that somebody all the way from Australia saw the call and sent us work. So that was lovely, making it technically an international journal. There are, you know, many, many states from all over the United States represented in it. I would say not surprises so much as affirmation. But I knew there are people out there who perhaps had not been able to write these stories and poems and essays until years after their own survivals. On the other hand, one of my students at Ithaca College was able to write a poem about a family member, and it was okay. Her family understood that she wrote this and that it was going to be published. Here she was only 19 years old at the time.
Wow. If you're just joining us, my guest is educator and poet Catherine Howd Mahan. Now, we're talking about her book, One for the Road. It's stories written for teenagers of alcoholic families. Now, you say in your intro that you wish this kind of book had been there when you were growing up. How did you deal with the isolation? Did you find any materials?
Oh, yeah, I wrote. I wrote journals. I wrote poems I wouldn't show to people. They weren't good poems at all then, but they were helping me, certainly, in the writing of it. And finally started to be able to talk to others as in college is when I was able, away from that place where I felt I had to be silent.
Yeah. And then one aspect of alcoholism that is reflected in this book is the fact that so many people who drink end up becoming quite violent. And that is reflected in this book. Did you suffer any of that violence? Did your mother used to bring drinking pals over to the house?
No, she was, again, that was part of her sense of, you know, she would just not want folks to know how much she was drinking at home. She liked to go to one particular bar where she felt she was treated like a lady and had friends there. So she had her social world. I don't remember even how often she would go there, but she had it when she needed it. I do remember vividly one night when I was 17 being outside and saying goodnight to my boyfriend. She thought I was taking too long, and she came down and grabbed the car door open and grabbed my hair and pulled me out, and that hurt.
And also
scratched
embarrassed
me accidentally.
You, right?
kind of embarrassing, sure. That was pretty vivid body memory. But for the most part, as I said, she was very contained and very, very functional.
That's the thing. I mean, a lot of kids are afraid to bring kids home to their house when their parents are alcoholics.
And some of the authors in the book have instances where they didn't know what they would find when they brought friends home and wrote about that embarrassment.
Yeah. Well, I do want you to sing.
I wish I could.
I want you to read another poem from this collection. It's called In This Hotel Called Home, and it seems apropos since we're wandering through the holidays now.
Yeah, this being a Christmas poem. In this hotel called home. Christmas day, and you were drunk again, handing out presents like a maitre d'. The tinsel tree lights flashed behind you, red and yellow, blue and green. We tore ribbons and silver paper to find things in boxes no one needs, cheap clothes and gadgets from catalogs that cost you 2 weeks' pay. How proud you were of vinyl gloves, plastic bookends bumpy with glue, even a nutcracker from Taiwan that broke at our first squeeze. Christmas, with cookies and chocolate again, your fat bottle of whiskey sporting a crimson Santa coat and cap. We gave you nightgowns and cologne, 3 pairs of slippers, a lacy apron, even 7 cartons of cigarettes that screamed Mother in their wrapping. Fruit, turkey, plum pudding aflame, you smiled and giggled through it all as Santa's buttons and belt came askew. At last, by the fire, you fell asleep, your head dropped back for a tippler's snore. Then we turned to each other, uneasy, judging who'd be the first to go and who'd linger to wake you for bed. Again, we hid the truth of this Christmas, Christmases past and to come. In this room strewn with disappointments, it is only you who offers love.
What a beautiful poem, Catherine. Has it been cathartic for you to be able to write this? Do you think it saved you in some ways?
Oh, definitely.
Being able to becoming a poet, even.
Oh, absolutely. It was my way of being able to survive. There's no question for
me. Yeah. Well, what do you think the legacy all told is for a child of an alcoholic or a spouse of an alcoholic? Can you tell us what it is for you?
A legacy? Mm-hmm. Goodness. Watching out for my own genetics. I have to be careful about alcohol. I've gone through periods of not drinking at all. Seeing it passed down to my daughter has been very painful in another way.
Wow.
Addiction. I think that there are people who will change their lives radically. My brother, as I said, he did not have alcohol in his life at all. He never had cigarettes. He liked to smoke cigars, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
The sense of seeing it more around the world, and I think some people taking political action. Certainly I'm thinking about
Mothers Against Truck Drivers, MAD.
Yes, MAD. Mm-hmm. Taking political action to try to make people aware, and it's hard, and especially that the license that comes with the holiday time and the pressure. If people do not want to use alcohol, it's very difficult socially. Again,
It is.
12-step
I know.
Programs.
You hear people say, don't spoil the party, and, you know, why don't you join us and party with us? And
Al-Anon is such an important group that way, certainly, where survivors find each other that way.
So you're not afraid of the sound of ice cubes as your brother was?
No.
And you allow alcohol around you?
I don't take hard liquor.
Okay.
I stopped doing that years ago, but drink wine, beer. Yeah, and I have to be careful.
Yeah.
I have to be careful.
Yeah. Have you taken political action? Have you gotten involved with some of the MAD and Al-Anon?
No, for me it's been the writing and the publishing, and as I say, especially doing this anthology. Our hope now is to get it out as widely as possible. I would love to get it into the hands of some of the really good healing centers, but many of them have their literature fairly proscribed. So we'd have to get it approved in order for that to happen. But just wanting to get it out into the hands of the teenagers so that they won't feel alone.
Yeah.
Reading other people's stories helps.
Don't you think in this era, though, that people are more open? Then kids are probably talking to each other more about these kinds of subjects?
I'm not sure.
Is it being talked about in schools?
I don't know. I don't know. Because of that sense of privacy and politeness, you know, it's one thing to talk about it in general. I'm thinking about the DARE program, for example. Both of my children were very involved in that as little ones. And both have said to me, they didn't really tell us the real story, Mom. They didn't tell us the real story. They didn't tell us what we needed to know, which my daughter certainly needed to know.
Yeah, so you're totally honest with your kids about this Have you had a sit-down with them and told them the whole story of your life?
Oh, yes. I've always and shared my work with them as well. And both they're both, you know, pretty much adult at this time, 19 and 23.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they're going to be on their own little ship.
They pretty much are, yes.
Well, what do you want people to take from this book? I mean, it's obviously getting into some hands. It's a heavy subject.
I want people to take hope because every person in this book survived to write about it, and the writing of it helped them. I want them to see ways that people have coped and that it's okay to express anger. Anger is not the same as hatred.
That's something that people do have to learn. Well, aside from this book, what else are you working on? I know you're a prolific writer. You've published so many collections. Tell us if you're working.
Since January, I've been working on a series about a character named Fox, who is a shapeshifter.
Wow.
She could be a full human being, she can be a full fox, or she can be kind of a hybrid. And it's autobiographical. I just wrote one about my mother, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I think I was thinking about us being together talking today, and that inspired me to think back to, you know, Fox thinking about her mother back in the Depression walking the streets of New York City.
Wow. That sounds fascinating. So are you segueing somewhat from poetry?
No, they're poems.
Oh, they're poems.
Oh, they're poems.
I was thinking maybe
series. Yeah, no, they're all poems.
Memoir or something.
Yeah. So I never know where one's going to go. And yeah, they started out with a news article that my husband Eric found in January about a hunter who was shooting a fox and didn't kill her, so went to finish her off. And in the fumbling, she wasn't hurt that badly. She got hold of the trigger accidentally, I think, and shot him.
Oh.
I love this story so much. And she was able to run away, and he had to go to the hospital.
Oh, I love it.
I mean, it's a good metaphor to work with, I think. Again, it comes back to survival, doesn't it?
It
may
does.
Feel like, you know, you've been shot, but hey, maybe you can turn it around.
That sounds absolutely fascinating. You also have a poem in the new Healing Muse, the 2011 Healing Muse
magazine,
which is a wonderful magazine.
It's a very good magazine, one that people are looking for, again, good stories similar to in One for the Road, but of course not just about surviving.
Yeah.
Family members using alcohol and drugs. Healing Muse is excellent.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Now, we only have about a minute left. Do you want to give some contact information, ways for people to get your book? Will you be giving any readings?
We've done some anthology readings already. I don't have any more scheduled for it, but Split Oak Press has a good web page, and people could go there and find out about not only this book, but all the other excellent books that Split Oak Press is publishing.
Uh-huh. And do you have a website or anything that...
I don't have a personal website. I'm still a technophobe. I don't even have a computer at home.
But amazing.
My husband Eric has promised me a good web page if I can tell him what I want on it for several years now, so it will happen.
Yeah, but you are up at Ithaca College.
Ithaca College in the writing department, yes.
Okay, well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a wonderful discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.